Paramahamsa Puri Vajakacharya Astavasata Sri Sri Madhista Bangari Sabai Charna Vindabhati Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jaya Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jaya Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jaya Prem Seka Ho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasati Vaisnava Bhakta Vrinda Ki Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopi Gopi Nath Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Gira Govardhan Ki Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Sri Gagamaya Ki Jaya Sri Jamnamaya Ki Jaya Sri Mata Tulsi Devi Maharani Ki Jaya His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya The Lordship Sri Sri Radhisham Sundar Ki Jaya The Lordship Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Ki Jaya The Lordship Sri Sri Gaunitai Ki Jaya The Lordship Sri Sri Lakshmana Shingadev Ki Jaya Sri Damodara Ki Jaya Iskandu Ramanriti Dham Ki Jaya All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Lotus Feet of Sri Sri Guru and Govinda. So, I happen to have missed the first part of the announcement, so if I repeat anything, then please bear. Today there are several auspicious days, which one is the marriage of Tulsi and Krishna. The other is the second night of the Rasa Yatra, which is the Rasa Leela, the first being two fortnights ago. And for that reason that the devotees are wearing white, it's a custom that on the Rasa Yatra day, the deities would wear white. It's also described that on the first Rasa Leela that was performed in Vrindavan, this second Rasa Leela is more performed in Navadvip. There that the devotees would decorate Radha and Krishna and with lots of flowers, and they worship them in that way. So, it's also the last day of Kartik, last of the 5 days of Vishnu Panchaka, as we all know. And of course, the appearance of Nimbarkacharya. Okay, so I'll step up the volume a little bit. So anyway, we heard a lot of nice gist of Nimbarkacharya being the head of the Kumara Sampradaya. Hare Krishna. Yes, I simply want to stay. So anyway, today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 53, entitled Krishna Kidnaps Rukmini. We will do text 25 through 31. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we can do verse 25 responsively, and the others we'll do simultaneously. Verse 25. Durbhagaya namedata nanukulo maheshwaraha devi navi mukti gauri Rudrani Girijasati Durbhagaya Namedata Nanukulo Maheshwaraha Devi Vavi Mukhi Gauri Rudrani Girijasati Durbhagaya namedata Nanu Kulo Maheshwaraha. Devi Navi Mukti Gauri. Rudrani Girijasati. So, word for word. Durbhagayaha, who is unfortunate. Na, not. Me, with me. Data, the creator, Lord Brahma. Na, not. Anukulaha, favorably disposed. Maha Ishwaraha, the great Lord Shiva. Devi, the goddess, his consort. Va, or Vimukhi, turned against. Gauri, Gauri. Rudrani, the wife of Rudra. Girija, the adopted daughter of the Himalayan mountain range. Sati, Sati, who in her previous life as the daughter of Daksha chose to give up, her body. The translation in purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. I am extremely unfortunate, for the Creator is not favorably disposed towards me, nor is the great Lord Shiva, or perhaps Shiva's wife, Devi, who is known as Gauri, Rudrani, Girija, and Sati, has turned against me. Purport. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti explains that Rukmini might have thought, quote, even if Krishna wanted to come, he might have been stopped on the path by the creator, Brahma, who is not favorably inclined toward me. But why should he be unfavorable? Perhaps it is Maheshwara, Lord Shiva, whom on some occasion I did not properly worship and who thus became angry with me. But he is Maheshwara, the great controller. So why would he be angry with such an insignificant and foolish girl as me? Perhaps it is Shiva's wife, Gauri Devi, who is displeased, though I worship her every day. Alas, alas, how have I offended her so that she has turned against me? But after all, she is Rudrani, the wife of Rudra, and her very name means one who makes everyone cry. So perhaps she and Shiva want me to cry. But seeing that I am so miserable about to give up my life, Why don't they soften their attitude? The reason must be that goddess Devi is Girija, an adopted daughter, so why should she be soft-hearted? In her incarnation as Sati, she gave up her body, so perhaps she now wants me to give up my body also. Thus, the Acharya, with realized poetic sensitivity, interprets the various names used in this verse. So, text 26, we can do together.
Evam chintayati bala govinda ritamanasa nyamilayata kalagya netre chakshu kalakule.
As she thought in this way, the young maiden, whose mind had been stolen by Krishna, closed her tear-filled eyes, remembering that there was still time. Purport? Srila Sridhar Swami explains the word kalagya as follows. Rukmini thought, it is not even the right time yet for Govinda to come, and thus she felt a bit consoled. 27.
Evam vadva pratikshantya govinda gamanan ripa vama uhur bhajor naitram aspuran priyabhashinaha.
O king, as the bride thus awaited the arrival of Govinda, she felt a twitch in her left thigh, arm and eye. This is a sign that something desirable would happen. 28.
Ata Krishna nivirdishta sa eva dvijasatamaha antapura charim devim raja putrim dadarshaha.
Just then, that purest of learned brahmanas, following Krishna's order, came to see the divine princess Rukmini within the inner chambers of the palace. Purport? According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Sri Krishna had reached the gardens outside the city, and out of concern for Rukmini, he had instructed the brahmana to tell her of his arrival. 29.
Satam prarista davanam avya grata gatim sati alakshya lakshana vijna sama prichak chuti smitaha.
Noting the brahmana's joyful face and serene movements, saintly Rukmini, who could expertly interpret such symptoms, inquired from him with a pure smile. 30.
Tasya vidayata praptam sasam sayadunandanam uktam cha satyam vachanam apnopayanam prati.
The brahmana announced to her the arrival of Lord Yadunandana and relayed the Lord's promise to marry her. And 31.
Tamagatam samagyaya vaidarbhirishtamanasa napasyanti brahmanaya priyamanyam nanamasa.
Princess Vaidarbhi was overjoyed to learn of Krishna's arrival. Not finding anything to hand suitable to offer the brahmana, she simply bowed down to him.
Now Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pushtaya Bhutalesh Majashilava Varpavitinamani Shri Shri Vindata Bhivira Padapad Pankajodayani Prabhupada Anagadaya Namas Shri Vibhavi Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pushtaya Bhutalesh Majashilava Kibidanta Samyutinamani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pucharani Nirvishesha Sinagadi Pascha Chadeshitani.
So, what I would like to do to take a little more time and read the purports of the Sarartha Darshini, which was written by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So the purport of verse 25 here is more of a summary, per se, of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti's actual purport given in his book. So if you can probably put back verse 25, and I'll just read the purports and go down. There are several purports to pretty much every verse here, and it gives some more insight on these pastimes and intimate relationship with Rukmini Devi. So the Pope Vishwanatha Chakravarti's purport to text 25 is, this verse reveals the intense anxiety of Rukmini, who thought maybe Krishna did want to come, but he was stopped on the path by the Creator, Brahma, who is not favorably inclined toward me. But why should he be unfavorable? Perhaps the cause is Lord Shiva, who has become angry because of my failure to properly worship him on some occasion. But he is Maheshwara, the great controller. So why should he be angry with such an insignificant and foolish girl as me? Perhaps it is Shiva's wife, Gauri Devi, who is somehow displeased with me, even though I worship her every day. Alas, alas, how have I offended her so that she has turned against me? But after all, she is Rudrani, the wife of Rudra, and her very name means one who makes everyone cry. So perhaps she and Shiva want me to cry. But seeing that I am so miserable that I am about to give up my life, why don't they soften their hearts? There must be some fault in Gauri's heritage. The reason must be that Durga Devi is also called Girija, the adopted daughter of a mountain, Girija. So how could her heart melt, being so stone-like? In her incarnation as Sati, she gave up her body, so perhaps she now wants me to give up my body too. And go to verse 26. Oh. Rukmini thought, O fickle mind, do not prepare to give up this body now, because the time of Krishna's coming has not yet passed. Therefore, before giving up this body, let me now see Krishna's face in meditation. Please do not prevent this, dear mind. Please do not prevent this, dear mind. Then she closed her eyes. 27. Oh. Rukmini's left thigh and other bodily limbs trembled, which are signs of auspiciousness. Priya Vanisaha. 28. The Brahmana was especially ordered by Krishna, go quickly and tell Rukmini that I have reached the city gardens. The word Devim means that in the rapture of seeing Krishna in her meditation, Rukmini was glowing. Due to her extreme absorption in meditation on Krishna, Rukmini was walking inside her chambers with the purpose of going to Krishna. 29. I, Sunanda Brahmana, so this is the Brahmana is speaking now. I, Sunanda Brahmana, have come now from the side of your beloved. Please cast your glance upon me, said the Brahmana in a loud voice. Thus roused from her meditation, Rukmini looked at the Brahmana as described in this verse. Noticing his serenity and the joy in his face, Rukmini's anxiety disappeared. Rukmini was expert in reading omens, so she understood that the Brahmana was successful in his mission because of his blissful countenance and the twitching of her left eye. Rukmini then smiled slightly, indicating her genuine joy. Previously, she had been falsely smiling to hide her inner suffering. 30. He announced to her that Yadunandana had arrived. He described how Krishna had promised to marry her, relating his words such as Tam Anayishya, I will bring Rukmini here to Dwarka. And 31. What can I give to this Brahmana to satisfy him as remuneration?
Thinking like this, Rukmini simply bowed down. Since she did not see any dear thing, Priya means dear, to express her indebtedness, even the offering of her own self. But at that very moment, the house of the Brahmana became filled with all sorts of treasures. This was the response of Mahalakshmi to show her gratitude. So remember, Rukmini Devi was actually the goddess of fortune. So anyway, this gives quite an insight of the intricacies of Rukmini's position as a great devotee and her expressions of these different qualities of devotees and these different emotions. So it's quite stunning to me to see how these can actually manifest. Me as a neophyte devotee, I always think differently when these would manifest in a different way. Like when I first learned about the six Goswamis, how their lives were so simple and austere, that they were very big and great devotees. So I'm thinking, well, you're going to see them on a very high platform with all these opulence and just being up there. Actually, when I joined the movement, that was my thought of the temple president, that he was like this big, great king, and, you know, we worship him like that. So when I start reading about the six Goswamis, understanding how austere they are, just wearing one piece of cloth, living under a different tree every evening, it was kind of hard for me to conceive one with that qualification being in that position. So to blend the quality of humility as one of the world's greatest qualities of a devotee was kind of pretty difficult for me to conceive of. Of course, until I went to Vrindavan, then I actually see some of these things where great personalities or remnants of great personalities there, that their situation was so very simple. But they express a lot of ecstasies. And here, we find that Rukmini Devi was expressing some of these ecstasies, manifesting some of these qualities, manifesting some of these emotions that we find in devotional service. That back in verse 25, she was literally like blaming these great personalities. We learned that that's something that we shouldn't do in devotional service. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says that whenever you're pointing one finger to someone, remember you're pointing three to yourself. So this is one quality we see here, that Rukmini, she's actually kind of thinking that maybe these are the personalities that are blocking her access to Krishna. These are the personalities that are standing in her way, that... So in a sense, she's kind of blaming them. But then she's describing, well, this personality has this issue, like Rudrani and Sati, that they have these issues, that they gave up their lives, so therefore they probably want me to do the same. So if we actually look at it, we would find that Rukmini Devi is... kind of a, we can say it's a sort of a madness, kind of a describing all these different things in the madness of our ecstasy. So we found that not long ago we were describing the Radharani speaking to the bumblebee, and she was expressing similar kind of a madness, this mada. But this madness is divine, it's divyan mada. So it's a high level of spiritual ecstasy. We find Lord Chaitanya also manifested these. Even in Shikshashtaka, it's there. He manifested this madness, this sometimes he was very eager. Then he became patient. He expressed the symptoms of melancholy, which is a kind of a depression.
So all these symptoms are there in the life of a devotee, especially advanced devotees. These symptoms and these emotions are there. So here Rukmini Devi is expressing some of these emotions. If we try doing this, blaming these demigods and great personalities, I can assure you the result's going to be different. They're going to be the same. But Rukmini Devi, she can say like this because she's qualified. Like, on first look, I was pretty surprised in Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book, Lord Chaitanya, His Life and Precepts. He actually criticized the Vaishnavas because they criticized the other religious practitioners like the Christians and whoever. So can we practice that? Can we do that? Or can I do that? Definitely not. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was qualified to present that statement. So similarly here, Rukmini Devi, with all it, she's in this ecstasy of wanting to see Krishna, and she's in this divyan mada, this divine madness, that she's pointing fingers to these personalities. She's also expressing another aspect of devotional service. And actually, this is here in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, text 69 of I don't want to paraphrase it, so I'll read it exactly. The verse of the introspective sage, that's a very, very popular verse. You're all very familiar with it. That what is night for all beings is a time of awakening for the self-controlled, and a time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. So here's another quality that Sri Rukmini Devi is manifesting, this quality of devotional service, of being always introspective. So what she's manifesting here is she's thinking and introspecting herself that why is it that I'm not able to get quicker the darshan of Krishna and get to his lotus feet? Is it because I've offended Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva's wife? Because as we know that the temple that she would go to every day, she would actually worship Lord Shiva and his wife. So she's thinking in this way that maybe I've committed some offenses. So a devotee thinks in this way. He always introspects himself that with his day's activities, sometimes in the nights he would reflect what I've done for the day, and have I offended anyone, or have I not done something that would bring me closer to devotional service? So it's imperative that one thinks like this if we're not at the moment. To always introspect our lives, to always be awake, to be awake to ignorance. Don't be like the outsiders to sleep through the actual realities of life, but to be fully aware and be conscious of what our surroundings are, what our setbacks are, and how we can make the best use of those situations. So another quality that she manifested here is like when she fell silent. Lord Chaitanya described this as this melancholy. You know, she got morose, she got kind of depressed, and felt silent. So in this way, also is that she showed symptoms of patience, which is another quality of the devotee. There are two main qualities, Shraddha, Utsahan. Shraddha is faith or patience, and Utsahan is enthusiasm. So in devotional service, these two qualities must go hand in hand. We must be eager to
serve Krishna and achieve him as quickly as possible. At the same time, we must be patient enough to wait for as long as it takes. I think was it Mother Akuti was talking about the one person and Mother Lakshmi the other day, of how long more should they wait for this chanting to work. So this patience must be there, that we are eager to serve, eager to perform devotion service to our utmost ability and with the greatest care. At the same time, we must be patient that if it takes this lifetime or lifetimes to achieve the goal of Krishna consciousness, that we are prepared to wait for it. So this is some of the contrast in the quality that a devotee possesses, and which Rukmini Devi is showing here. One other thing here about Rukmini Devi is that what is mentioned that she was very expert in reading omens and symptoms. It is not uncommon for a Vedic woman, a woman in Vedic times, to be very, very qualified, especially the Kshatriya ladies. With all, you don't generally hear so much about them, but they are very, very qualified. They are expert in military science, in psychology, in the art of dancing. They learned that they understand knowledge of the Vedic scriptures. Like Rukmini, for example, she just heard of Krishna's pastimes, and she knew that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are so many sages, so many sadhus, so many brahmanas used to go through the palace and talk about the Vedic scriptures, talks about culture, talks about religiosity. But she had fine-tuned intelligence. She was able to conclude that this is it. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I want to achieve the highest goal. So that's first-class intelligence. So we find there are many other personalities in Vedic times that they were also very, very qualified. Even in the Mahabharata with Arjuna's wife, Ulupi, the princess of Manipur, she was actually very, very expert in the military science, actually to such an extent that when she was a little child, her parents always dressed her like a boy because they had wanted a son. And she grew up dressed like a boy, and everyone thought that she was a boy. And she fought in war. She did everything that a Kshatriya would do. She was ruling the kingdom also, helping her father, until she met Arjuna. That's when her feminine nature kicked in. So they were very qualified. There are many instances, like Kunti Devi. She was so very qualified. And Draupadi, do you know what it takes to control five men like the Pandava brothers, who are the most powerful Kshatriyas on earth? It's no ordinary thing to control them. That Kunti had to be very qualified to keep them under her control. And Draupadi, that's why Draupadi actually acted later on as an instructor to Rukmini and the other wives of Krishna, because she was so expert in serving her husbands. She was so expert that she was able to serve five of them at once and control them. And not five ordinary people, five like the Pandavas. It's if you actually learn of their character and their actual qualities and their strength, it's really hell on earth to stand next to them, not to speak of keeping them under control. You know, with their divine qualities and their Kshatriya qualities. So these, in Vedic culture, these women, they are very, very qualified. With all them, it just appears to be like ordinary, but they're highly, highly qualified to take this stand. So, and also one thing is that they were very good at understanding symptoms and reading symptoms. It's one part of Vedic science and possibly Vedic astrology too, that look at these symptoms. Even Maharaj Yudhishthira, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, we learned that when, after the war, everything was settled, Maharaj Yudhishthira was established back on the throne, Krishna left. He went back to his city, Dwarka. At that time, his dear friend Arjuna went to visit him. And Arjuna stayed for a long time. He spent 7 months. And we all know that's the time when Krishna left the planet. In the meanwhile, Maharaj Yudhishthira was seeing very inauspicious omen. He was seeing the jackal was crossing from his left to his right, was seeing dark clouds in the sky, and there are so many omens that is described there in the purports by Srila Prabhupada in the Bhagavatam. And Yudhishthira Maharaj concluded, said the only reason for this is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has left the planet. Even though he didn't want to conclude, that was the hardest thing for him to do, to conclude that Krishna has actually left. There's a whole really nice pastimes in the chapter entitled "The Pandavas Retired Timely." So it's a thing in Vedic culture that you can look at symptoms and tell what's going to happen. Like for a woman, it says when the left side of the body is twitching, the eye, the thighs, the legs, then it's auspicious. And for the men, it's the right. Embarrassing enough, I want to, you know, for myself, it's like the opposite. That if my left side or my left eye twitches, it's more something auspicious. And my right is the opposite. But generally, with men, it's the opposite. Even though it's not described here, but there are other parts where it says. So these are some of the qualities of Rukmini Devi, and these descriptions should be carefully understood from a philosophical point of view, that one should pull something out of context that, oh, Rukmini Devi, she is pointing fingers to these great demigods for her apparent misfortune, therefore we should do the same. No, it's very important that we understand where she was coming from, what's her status in devotional service. Like one time, there was a Govardhan Pooj celebration somewhere, and next thing you know, that they had a big hill in the middle of the temple room, and Srila Prabhupada was upstairs in his room, and all hell break loose, whole madness going on in the temple room. So one devotee went up and complained to Prabhupada. He said, "Oh, Srila Prabhupada, the devotees are just throwing prasadam all over, and that's an offense. They're throwing prasadam all over the place." And Prabhupada said, "Who started it?" He said, "Oh, Jayananda Prabhu started it." He said, "Okay, if he does it, it's all right." So, you know, because his status was different. If he does something like that, which appears to be, you know, I don't want to comment more, but he's qualified. So, similarly, qualification is the first standard that one should look at. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada would many times say, "Oh, don't worry, you know, I can chastise, I can call them rascals, but they won't take me seriously, I'm an old man." But you don't try that. Yeah. I remember one time with my Guru Maharaj, we had a Harinam in the marketplace in Guyana, and just outside was the government office for the entire municipality. It was just outside. We were doing Harinam there on a Friday. That's the busiest market day. And all these officials, they came out for lunch, and they were attracted by this kirtan, and they all came around, I don't know, maybe 40 of them. And then I told him, I was his servant, I told him, "These are all the officials from the, you know, the government here." And he stopped the kirtan, and he started a lecture. And he was very heavy with them. He was really heavy. He was calling them asses and rascals, that they are the leaders of this county. They are the leader of the entire region. So therefore, they should understand that Krishna consciousness should be the topmost goal. And they should learn to accept and adopt this and lead the people in the right way. So he did it for about 20 minutes, and everybody was stunned. They were carefully listening to him. And then when he finished, they all left. Then he turned to me. He said, "You don't ever try that. They would smack you in the face." He said, "I can do it." So here is the other thing, is that you have, when one is qualified, then sometimes different things can come out that we cannot imitate. That's why Srila Prabhupada taught us the art of following, not imitating. That one should follow in the footsteps, not imitate the footsteps of our line and devotees and so forth. So there are a lot more here to be discussed, but time is running out, so I'll stop there. If anyone has any questions or comments, we can take them. Kalyapani Prabhu?
I hesitate to bring this up because it's such a hot topic, but someone with the qualifications of Rukmini Devi, you know, Kshatriya woman in all fields, spiritual and material, so qualified, but yet she doesn't take any position. And I was in Canada recently, a young lady, a young woman devotee came up to me and said the same thing, that, you know, I've got 2 university degrees, I know the philosophy really well, I have management skills, should I be, you know, should there be equal opportunity for expressing these skills, for putting these skills into effect? She was a preacher. She runs a university program, and she was asked this question.
Yeah.
And she didn't. She was asking me how to reply to it. Can you make some comment on this?
Yeah. Basically, we all have, you know, both men and women. We have equal opportunity. It's there. There's no discrimination. So we have to apply that. We find in the our Gaudiya tradition, who is one of our first spiritual teachers, Mother Janavi. Tamahar Prabhu was describing this the other day. She's one of the first that she took up that responsibility to preach vigorously Krishna consciousness. So everyone has that opportunity. It's a matter for them to take the charge, to go out and do it. I know, like, my kids always get on my wife's case that she's such an expert singer, that why don't she come out and lead kirtan or wherever. Her whole life as a gurukul, I known her since she was 10 years old. And all she does every day, like, I don't know, how many hours a day? 6-7 hours a day, pretty much, is kirtan all the time. You know, I'm talking about like 7 days a week. So my kids always get on her case that, okay, you know, you have such an ability, why not use it for Krishna service? Why not do? And she expressed shyness. So, you know, it's a, we all have the opportunity, but we have to come forward and use those qualifications in Krishna's service. In the very first verse of the Upadeshamrita, what does it say? Vachu Vega Manasa Koda Vegam, Jiva Vega Udara Pasta Vegam. What is the rest? Yeah. What's the meaning? Right. Did that verse says only women or only men? No. Everyone, anyone. As long as you have those qualifications, as long as you can control and you can you're qualified in that way, Rupa Goswami says, you're qualified to make disciples, you're qualified to preach, you're qualified to give. So there's no discrimination. It's a matter of we having the ability and coming forward. Like, somebody asked me the other day, I don't know who, I was on a Skype conversation somewhere, I don't know where, but anyway, somewhere overseas. And one of the questions they asked that, I mentioned they asked me what's on my programs here. Part of a place where I have some responsibility, I'm not recalling what it is. So, they asked me what's my service here. So among other things, I said, well, like, I would give class like once a month or so. But I said, even though I'm, you know, I don't think that I should be. So, because we have so many devotees in this community that are qualified, that are senior to myself and can give so much. And then I asked, well, why aren't they speaking? Why aren't these, you know, so many qualified devotees, 700 devotees in this community? I said, well, you know, maybe some of them don't want to come forward. I can't say for sure. But I know that many devotees have so many qualifications. They know the philosophy so very well. And I had my tail burnt with that when some years ago I took up the service for taking up the tithing here. One time the tithing program at temple had fell apart, and some or the other the devotees learned that I did that in Miami and was very successful, so they asked me to take it up. So I took it up, and for 2.5 months, and I was contacting all the devotees, and 90% of them are, you know, like senior, very, very senior devotees. And then I thought, well, you know what? Before I contact them, it's better I get some advice, because these are all senior devotees. I should learn how to deal with them, learn how to. So one person that helped me a lot is Kalakanta Prabhu. He's expert in this field. So he gave me some coaching. And he said, first thing, do not discuss philosophy with these devotees. Because why? Because they already know the philosophy. Secondly, do not discuss, tell them to serve, because they have done that already. They have already served, you know, served their entire life. And there are some other points that he mentioned, but these are two that were significant. So I said, well, you know, what else am I going to do? So he said, you just be sincere and Krishna would probably, you know, give you some understanding. And indeed it worked, you know, like I contacted devotees and they're all highly qualified, and we just, things worked, and everything, the tithing came back up. It was a really, really nice program. So they, you know, these qualifications are there, but sometimes we don't come forward to bring it. And so this onus is on us to come forward. Like Srila Prabhupada says, he says, my shower is always there, my shower is mercy. All you have to do is step out of the house and come out and take the shower. So with all, you might be qualified, like it's raining outside, you need the rain, but you're hiding in the house, you know, so just come out and take the shower. So there are many qualified devotees in our society, very, very qualified. So we just have to, you know, come forward and give. Yeah.
I accept that answer for the the current situation, the modern setting. Would you give the same answer to Rukmini Devi if she asked you the question in the Vedic setting, that she needs to just come forward, she needs to get out there?
I probably would, because we can see. Because you can see examples of Queen Kunti, that when her husband passed away, she took that leading role, she took that charge, and she had an arrangement with her co-wife, what's her name? Madri, that you perform the sati rite with her husband, and I'll go forward and lead these Pandavas. So she took up that charge of leading, take that leading role. And until we know the whole story, history ensued from there on. So yes, I would do that. There are many instances where some woman, yet again, Ulupi, she took the charge, she ruled the kingdom, she was such a powerful person. There are many examples of women in Vedic times who took very leading role. They're highly qualified. And of course, there's one saying that behind every great man, there is a great woman. One time, the other day, one of our tenants came to see me at my workplace. This older black gentleman, he has been married for over 50 years, was like history, one of the original wife from 50 years. So then, he always liked to joke, you know. So then one of my co-workers asked him, he said, you know, you seem to have a very good relationship. And you seem to be like the boss, you know, like you're leading this relationship and going on very nicely. So he said, yes, I am the boss, like I am the head. But what turns the head? He says the neck that turns the head. So she's the neck. So they are very great personalities. And even we see in every sober relationship, even in Krishna consciousness, if you look deeply behind it and see what one of the reasons that that relationship stands out is because of a very good wife behind there. So they're leading, like there's also saying that a wife controls by letting the husband think that he's in charge. If you ever heard that. So of course, and then in America we always hear that saying, well, the wives are the leaders, you know. So it's, yes, I would with full confidence I would say yes, I would say that to Rukmini Devi if I had a chance. Sri Krishna Prabhu.
I think I don't want to contradict you really, but like in the Vedic setting, a woman is always under the protection of her husband and the society and everything.
Yeah.
And as such, she has a role to play, like in the house, she takes care of this, she does the financing and everything. So that's there, but in terms of go out for battle and leading and stuff like that, that's a different case really. I think that was what he was hinting about. And that's not possible in a Vedic setting, you see? Because if you need protection, then really you can't give protection. You know, so let me finish. So, and that's a Vedic injunction also. See, in the law book of Manu, that's clearly stated and explain why, and there's so much details and everything.
Anyway, you finish?
Let me finish.
Yeah.
In the case with Kunti, because her husband died, she had to look after the kids. You see? And Madhuri said, because my husband was lustful with me, then I shall do the sati world. Mm. It's not like, you know. And she told Kunti to take care of the kids. Really. You know, but I mean, taking care of the kids, that's natural anyway, really. But in terms, I mean, he was talking about leading and going on battle and be king and different kind of thing. You know, that's a different issue.
I'm still thinking that there's a difference between what Kalyapani Prabhu was saying and what you're bringing up, is that we're talking about general leadership, not only leadership in like going out there, but leadership in our own self, in our own lives, in that strong stand of our activities. So, like for example, I better not bring that one up, it might not quite fit. But when you talk about leadership, we talk about leadership that brings about a very strong effect and very strong results. And we see that, like, even in our society
or
here.
Support, you know.
Hmm?
Or like support.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, support. And actually, one can be a leader by not being the senior person, like in a relationship what you're talking about. By constitution, the husband is a senior person. By qualification, it might not be that way. And even if, or let's take a very flat base example in our society. Srila Prabhupada set up the GBC system. Okay, Now, what you find that many of the GBC members, they are not sannyasis, they are not like, you know, on, we would say, on that higher spiritual plane, and they are managing some of the sannyasis and other devotees who are advanced more than them, per se. I know in my case, in my service, I manage a lot of devotees who are much senior to me. But it doesn't mean that I cannot manage or control with all I'm junior. So in a similar case, that with these ladies, with all they may be, you know, junior by constitution, but they still have strong managing qualities that determines the outcome of that manager. You think you get a point I'm making?
Yeah, well, of course, that's a point well noted. But also in this age, in Kaliyug, there'd be like a role reversal, where it's predicted that women would take up a lot of leadership role.
Yeah.
You know, you're seeing it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but like the art of Vedic age.
Yeah, and there's also a reason for that. In Vedic times, there, on the most part, there weren't a need, per se, for a woman to take up leadership role. Because why? Because everyone was quite responsible. They were able to freely act and behave or perform their duties as a wife, and all of them were married, unlike now where you have probably 50% of the women are single, and probably close to 99% of the men are not responsible. So it's by the age, as the age goes, then there's a need for these different categories to take up this responsibility, whether willingly or forcefully. But in Vedic times, there wasn't that need. There was no need for a woman to go out and work. She would be treated like a queen at home, all being taken care of. You know, she take care of the home, and the husband takes care of everything else. There's no need. So even though she can lead, there is no need. So you see, there's a difference of qualification and need. As in this age, there's a great need. Madam Mohan Prabhu?
Just a short statement. There's a general rule, and then there's the actual principle that has to be applied in a practical way. So the general rule is generally you don't see that. But in specifics, there's no hard and fast rule against it. But there's a general principle that most people, most ladies, they're satisfied in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's fully taken. Yeah, Dan Govinda Prabhu.
In this case, that Rukmini that expressing her anxiety, disparagement, these are taste. This is not like she's lower than Krishna or higher than Krishna. This understanding is not correct. In Nectar Devotion, Srila Prabhupada explained these 33 symptoms, 33 bhava that they serve. One of this is disparagement, criticizing self. And I'm not qualified, which she did few sloka before your, that I'm not qualified, he's so pure, so he's not coming. These are actually tasting, they taste this. It appears in the mundane world that it is a painful. Also in Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary in Sarathya Darshini, in amongst the queens, they had these meetings, actually three times Sukhdev Goswami writes that same thing, that each queen figuring out how to subdue the Lord, and they fail. And he gave an example. Even Srila Prabhupada, I heard another lecture, Prabhupada one time speaking in 3rd canto, 2nd chapter. You can read one part where Prabhupada says that Lord Krishna was joking with Rukmini later on. Said, you know, I was born in a coward village. I don't know my caste and, you know, fathers, dynasty is not really clear. You come from a very exalted royal family. I did not know what is love, but you expressed through letter. Prabhupada says that. And you could have tried any other prince. You can think, still think. Just by hearing this, Prabhupada said she fainted.
Yeah.
So is she want to control Krishna, or she wants to be controlled by Krishna's love?
Yeah, she wants to be controlled by Krishna.
Exactly. So there is no fight in spiritual world or who is controlling. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think the topic eventually switched to women taking up leading roles, whether in the material world or in the spiritual realm. So it became that kind of a debate and discussion. But there is no question of, yeah, Rukmini was, she didn't want to manage anything. She just wants to be controlled. She wants to serve Krishna, so much so that even they, all the queens, they had wanted, they even asked that Krishna explain to them his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan with all his rasa dance and everything, and he didn't do it. But of course, Mata Rohini was there, and she did. Yeah. Yeah. So she did that, and the result of that is that Lord Jagannath manifested. That's another long, time is running out, so we're going to have the last question with Mata Ragatmika. Okay, whatever it is, chastisement is welcome too.
No, never. I just wanted to mention in this discussion of women and roles that women should not underestimate their power within their realm of influence. We've heard the statement, "The hand that rocks the cradle rules the world." It's in the mother is the first guru. In the Mahabharata, it also states that the woman is the soul of the family. So these things underline that the point that women have incredible influence and power to change the world. The most impressionable years of a person's life are the first 5 years. And who's mostly influencing that is the mother. So, and devotee women are, what an achievement when they're simultaneously managing the household and on top of that raising Vaishnavas and keeping up their sadhana. What an achievement. And then in later years when the children are out of the home, it's so important to have grandmothers also. In this society, more and more, there are grandmothers now, and it's a very essential factor in creating the extended family, the whole culture, the spiritual culture. And we see how many women have taken up also leadership roles as presidents and even GBC, you know, because they have this time now, and they have the wisdom and inspiration and to cooperate.
I would say also the courage and encouragement that it's given here is, generally speaking, you know, they're shy, but you can see the boldness coming out, and Krishna's making wonderful arrangements. And, so, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.